Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Hourglass Bride. Today we have such a special show for you. We have the most extraordinary guest. And as we talk about living the happily ever after, and what does that look like to unfold love, to unfold life, to unfold family, to unfold community. And today's guest is amazing. We are talking today with cantor Esther Leon Schwartz. Esther is profound in her wisdom and her knowledge and her teaching of the heart. Her journey to how she is taught and how she shares, not just with local communities, but across the nation and internationally, and how she's working with the United Nations and how she elevates consciousness is just profound. So we are excited, we are honored, we are blessed at this first day of the new year to welcome our esteemed guest, cantor Esther Leon Schwartz. Esther, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Nicole. I am honored and privileged. Yes, I am.
Well, it's such a joy being with you. And this show, when we started this show, the idea was, how do we help families? How do we help individuals that are just starting their lives together, or people who have lost spouses or loved ones that are starting over, or people that are combining families, or even in our own communities? How do we become a family? How do we help one another? How do we live that happily ever after in unlimited life? And so I'm so thrilled because I know you have so much to say on this. And I guess the first question I wanted to ask you, which I always love to share with my guests, is to ask, like, did you know when you were 5 and 6 and 7, did you know that this would be your life path to help people be able to connect in community and in love?
Well, I'm not sure I knew in a sense of like what I know now, you know, like what you know now. I should rephrase that. At 5 years old, when I held onto my papa's hand, and when he threw me over the barbed wire fence, I know I'm going forward, but I'll get the only way I could answer the question.
Sure.
By letting you, yes, hear the circumstances, because that many times determines what you feel or think you feel, or feel something. You're not sure what it is, but it's something. And when my dad threw me over the barbed wire fence, when the Nazis were chasing us, and he looked to the heavens, and he said, "Save my daughter, she'll always serve you." And he threw me over the fence into the arms of the Swiss, the Red Cross. I knew something inside that God had something special in store for me, because my papa asked him to. And so that's the earliest I can remember anything that would involve me for later down in life. But the connection was right from, well, before I was born, but early on in my years, because my papa was so connected to God and had his relationship with God, and my relationship with my papa was my everything. So whatever was it, his everything was my everything. Yeah. And then when I came to America in 1948 on the Queen Mary with all the hundreds and hundreds of other refugees and kids, I held onto my papa's hand, and I saw this most beautiful statue in the water. And I felt like she was pointing her wand at me, and she was saying, "You are safe. You're in America." Now, I was 8 years old. Then, at that moment, I knew that God had something in store for me, to do something that no one should be afraid. No one should be scared of that they're going to die, or that they have to hide, and that they have no food, and they have no medicine, no school, and just seeing horrible things that are going happening of people. people dying in the way they were dying. And so I knew one day God would let me do something. But it didn't happen until much, much later in life.
Wow. It's such an amazing journey to think about being thrown over a fence, to be part of the Holocaust history, to have a relationship with the Father that's so strongly believed.
Yeah.
And I love looking on your website, and I even posted it today, where you say that everything is possible. And I love that, that you believe and share that everything is possible.
Yes, when it's all said and done at the end of the day, for me, it is about having that relationship, something that's bigger than we can ever fathom, but you just feel it. And when you have that relationship, and look upward or look around you and just look at the world and look at people and look into their eyes. When I look into people's eyes, I see God. I see God. And gives me hope. That fires me up to try to do something to help to make things beautiful again and hopeful and righteous, meaning
wow.
The unjust. Yeah.
Right.
That's
just
bottom line.
Everything that you, yes, and everything you've done, because when I look at all of the organizations, I mean, even Braille Institutes and healing centers, and you've administered the sick, and you're part of the Voices of Hope and the unfoldment of your caring and your nurturing and your compassion. It's just extraordinary. It's like unyielding that you have just moved forward into love and move forward into love and look for more places to help people. And so is that magnetic pull part of that God spirit, or is that you seeing hurt or pain or woundedness and saying, I want to administer to that and help heal that?
Well, I think what you just said, it applies to me, that ignited that fire or that feeling in me, that sadness, that knowing, because I've been in that place. And that's why I do. I'm always examining, every single moment, but quite often during the day, I hold myself accountable. Why am I doing? What am I doing? Because I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, you know what you're doing. You know who you work for. But you know who you work for. You're not sure. I'm not sure what I'm doing. But whatever I'm doing seems to have an effect. And I think because of my intention and my fervor for believing in what I am doing could possibly, you know, nurture or help somebody, that's good enough for me. Too much examination of why I have learned for myself is not good, because it's like someone that's searching for always, they're all their lives searching, is there a God, is there not a God, is there a God, is there not a God. I believe it's better to believe than not to believe, in terms of God. And then, as far as your meaning in your life, the way one lives their life in purpose, for purpose, well, what does that all mean, really? And for me, it means to care about others and care about our earth. Because everything has an energy. Everything, all inanimate objects, everything is God made. So therefore, when I entertain that in my mind and think about that and remind myself, hey girl, you know who you're doing this for, that's the only thing that gives me calm inside.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And when you talk about, it doesn't matter what your faith or what your background is, there are two things I would really love to talk about on that point. One is music, because I know that you use music as part of your healing arts. And I think no matter what country or what background, there is something in the vibration of the song that help bring people together. So can you touch on that a little bit? Because I know that that's a big part of your world.
So people have told me that when I sing, there's something happens. Something happens. And I don't feel real comfortable saying when they tell me what happens. It's good, but it's hard for my ears to hear that the heavens open up and they feel like they're with God. I don't, when people say that to me, it kind of like, I just, all I do is look upward and say, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God, because I'm not sure. I know what they're saying, but I don't know what they're saying, because how could it possibly be coming from me? Just little old me, you know. So I can't possibly think that but evidently something is happening. So that's when I preface before about questioning things too much. I don't question things anymore. I just let it. I just let it do what I'm supposed to do, and whatever that is, it's guiding me to do it. Just giving me the strength and the courage and the brave heart to do it. I do it. And music, because we come from music. We come from music. We come from the music is all, the heavens, all the angels are always singing. It's all song and music and beautiful sounds and waves. And so it amazes me. I was just thinking the other day when I was singing, how do these sounds come out? I mean, where did that come from? I mean, it's like, you know, when you play a musical instrument, you maneuver it, manipulate it, right? But when you sing, it's different. The tone, when you speak or sing, the tone that comes out, my God, everybody's got this different tone. And then when you open up and you want to sing a song and these beautiful sounds come out, oh, wow. Give me a break. This is really too good. I mean, where did that come from? So the music part, yes, it's been, music has healed before you were born, when you're in your mommy's tummy. All the sounds that come through, the vibrations, it's all floating, like floating notes, floating music. So yes, music is so familiar to the soul, and I think that's why, because I am a volunteer prayer chaplain at a major hospital, and when I'm asked to sing, people that are in comas, they've actually, there's been times people have come out of coma. I don't know whether it's because the vibration in my voice, but I just feel like there's something there that is so familiar in the soul that it reacts to it because it's familiar.
Does that and I know that when you sing, I mean, I've been to events where you're singing, and the most extraordinary thing, because people I know that are listening to the show, they're thinking, oh, well, she's a cantor, and it's all this religious music, and she's singing, and it's all angels from heaven. You have people with tambourines and drums and dancing around the room and people spinning in circles, and the joy and the exuberance and the playfulness and the fun is just extraordinary. I've never witnessed anything. People having it like watching a kindergarten class, but they're adults, and so share that.
Look, this is the deal. God is my best friend, and we hang out together, and we have a lot of fun, okay? And I just wish for people to feel that, to feel how much fun and how much joy and that when you hang out with something that you don't know what it is, but it feels right, feels good. It's all about that. It's dancing, jokes, funny. It's just about not doing harm, valuing life. Once you value life and value the earth, it's all fun, fun in a meaningful, good way. That's how I feel it. I don't know too much, but I feel things.
And is it important
make any sense?
For couples? Yes. And is it important for couples or families to teach their children through music, because when I watch the people that come to you, they become transformed people. They just start singing, and all of a sudden they're hugging one another and they're kissing one another, and this whole transformation happens.
It's when you bond in song and poetry and dance, everything else dissipates. That becomes your real being, your real you, the real, real you. You're back to that seed that was not born yet. And the reason why it becomes so joyous and it becomes so heal and transform, even if just for a moment, you know, there's just something about it that is so unexplainable, so unexplainable. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the way it needs to be left alone. It's unexplainable because it's God's thing, you know what I mean? And he gave it to us, and just take it and don't abuse it, and appreciate it, and give it some reverence, you know. And give it some reverence by appreciating it and treating it well.
That's just beautiful. And I read somewhere that when you were little, when you escaped, that you actually were somewhere with nuns, and that it was the church music that started in.
I do think so. I was born in a convent. Actually, it was southern part of France, in the alley. My mother was ready to give birth. They wouldn't let us in the hospital because we were Jews. And my father, it was pouring. My mother was lying in the alley by the garbage cans, and he saw a convent, and he ran over to it and banged and banged. They came running out, and they took my mother in to the basement because this was under German occupation. They were bombing Marseille and in the south part of France at that time. And the music, I mean, the DNA of the church music really became so part of me, so part of my DNA. And when I started to sing, and I was very, very, very shy, afraid to sing, I was made fun of because I was scared. I grew up just being scared and afraid of everything. And somebody would ask me to, you know, like I wanted to be in choir so badly. And when it was my turn, I could hardly speak English, right? But it was my turn just to do one little thing. A croak, like, came in my throat, and that hurt. That hurt so bad because all the kids were laughing. And it took many years to get over that. It took so many years to have that brave heart to stand up there and do this, to sing. And to this day, there are times, for one reason or another, something happens and it won't come out. So when it come out and I hear it, I just, the idle chatter in my head goes, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. And then somehow I know how to maneuver the tones. I mean, it's crazy, you know, to be able to take a tone and make it go high, make it low, make it soft, make it loud. And I thought to myself this last time around when I did High Holy Days now, my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe that I could do this. And so it's like we all have song. We all have a voice. All our voices are different. But once you use it, even if you think it's out of key, even if you think it's not good, it is good. It is beautiful because it's your God-given voice. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that helps. But,
oh, absolutely. That's so special and such a gift. And thank you for sharing that. And now I would like to ask you, since part of that music, I know that you do Friday night Shabbat dinners, and I have been able to attend.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's just amazing. And for those that are from other faiths or other religions or even those that, you know, grew up with that, one of the things that I think is most profound when I'm there and I have witnessed is the fact that taking a night to dine together, because in today's modern world, families don't even sit down to have dinner or breakfast, and they don't share any time to appreciate each other and take that moment of what's around them. So can you talk about the significance of having even one night a week in which you take the time to do that with your family and those you love? Yes.
Well, my father, I mean, Shabbos was the thing. My father, you know, being from Poland and Orthodox, I mean, Shabbos, I grew up with Shabbos, meaning the family all came together at sundown. And, it really started in the beginning of the day on Friday, okay? We would go on Fairfax, and we would go get challah, and we would go get wine, and bring it home. And I would set the table already early in the day with our best dishes and tablecloth. And when I could afford it, I was my parents bought me a new dress, you know, and shoes for the Sabbath. It was like, oh my God, it was like this is going to be such a cool party. And it's a Sabbath. It was laid down over 4,000 years ago in the Ten Commandments, the Fourth Commandments, and thou shalt honor the Sabbath. And it wasn't just for Jewish people. It was for all peoples. You know, when Moses brought down the Ten Commandments, this was intended for all peoples. So when I got older, I missed the Sabbath, and I just kept questioning myself, what am I supposed to do to bring people together? That one special day on Shabbos, what can I do to bring all peoples together of all religions and all colors and children, everybody, just to have those moments of camaraderie, those moments of looking at each other, and at Shabbos, we're here together. You know, and so I was invited to Lenny's Deli. I call it the Promised Land, Lenny's Deli, where we do Shabbos. Yeah, we've been there now going almost on 2 years. And I get there like at 3:00, okay, and I set it with the most beautiful blue goblets that some of the congregation got, these beautiful blue goblets. And I go get, you know, I have the pretty baby blue tablecloth and the silver trays to put the challah on and cover it with the challah covers. And even my son, who, you know, he's like a rocker, manager for rock stars and everything, and he brings me every Friday before I leave, he brings me the most delicious homemade challah. It tastes so
Now, I'm going to interrupt sweet. You for just a second. For those of you that don't know, challah is a bread. And so it's a homemade bread. I know people that are like in Malta right now or South Africa or whatever country that they're listening to this from, and they're saying, what's a challah?
Right.
Challah is a bread. And
right.
So we break bread and wine and the
together.
I love that your son does this all together.
And,
yes.
And the challah, and when you guys, whoever, you're all welcome. When you see it, it's all braided. So why is it braided, you know? But it's braided. It's braided because that's like a sign. And it says, hey, we're all connected. Let's share bread. And that's what it's about. And the same thing with the sweet wine. And when we light the candles, the women, I invite all women to come up and they put you know, I have prepared these really pretty scarves, like lightweight, so it won't mess up your hair. And they put it on their head, and they light the candles. They bring in the light to the world, and they all do it, the women. And the women, the men, which I prepare for them, which is a piece of poetry from the liturgy about Woman of Valor, they recite the Woman of Valor to the women. And then the women recite something about the words of a man. And you get so magically consumed into this whole experience of all of us together. It's like a, it's so beautiful to watch and see. And that, then we became Shabbos buddies. So everybody becomes as anointed as a Shabbos buddy. And it's open people. It's just, it's like we're carrying our tradition of 4,000 years. It works. It works.
That's beautiful. It's so fabulous. And how would you suggest for families in their own home to be able to keep that kind
Absolutely.
Of feeling for a day that is special
yeah.
to them? Or
it's the most important thing, especially for the children. The children are our future. What children see, they will copy and do. It has such a profound effect what a parent can do and what parents can do in family and friends gathered around one night a week. And it's nice to do it on the Sabbath because the Sabbath's for all peoples. And to come and put on your best clothes and just dollop your hair, new nail polish, the guys with new ties, and to come together and say hi. We as a family. We're family. Meaning that family, meaning you don't even have to know each other, but you know what? You're here for Shabbos. We're family. And it's such a profound impact on the soul that it carries over throughout the whole week until the next Sabbath. And if you do this like once a week, it just bonds the hearts, and you feel something that's so good, and takes away anything that's not good.
Hmm. How joyous! I mean, what a magical gift to be able to do that with your children and with your spouses. And I think that that's what I get, you know, when everybody's singing and they're dancing. And when you talk about that the woman does the prayer for the man and the man does this beautiful, you know, prayer and poetry for the woman, we have a lot of listeners on this show that are newly getting married or people that... or have been married and are looking to deepen their relationship.
Right.
And I know that you work with a lot of couples. What advice would you give to couples that are either just starting their lives together or couples that have started to drift it that want to find a way to rebond and to make their love even stronger?
Well, I think to take that night out, I mean, in your home, your home, create a sacred space in your home. Create a sacred space in your home. And I would say that put there your most precious things on the table and light candles and renew your vows. When you first got married, renew your vows to yourself, to each other, to the world, and to God. It's renewing the vows. It's just, it's about renewing our vows and remembering what did we say when we were under the canopy and in front of the minister or the rabbi? What did we feel? What did we say? Let's get back to that, because it's the world around you that takes you away from all that. It can take you or distract you, you know, but you can come back very easily if you really want to and believe you can.
Mm-hmm. I remember that we had a pastor on, and he was saying that a vow is not a compliment, that I think you're sexy, I think you're pretty, I really like you. And so when you say to renew your vows, what is a vow to you?
What your commitment is, your feelings about this life, and what are you willing to commit to? What are you willing to commit to? What are you willing to commit to? So you have to search your soul and what, who and what you, what are you made of, and what are you willing to commit to that it will stay fresh and good and whole and pure. You are made of to make it pure and help others to come back to their wholeness, to their pureness of the person, the soul that you are. And the reason I say because you were born pure. You come from pureness. You come from music. You come from everything on earth that you see and feel and touch and smell. You've known before you were born. It's all in there. It's all in you. That's why people actually are so compatible to the world. We have more in common with each other and the world than not. And we have forgotten that because there's so many distractions. But if you look at a flower and you smell the flower, you know, if it has a fragrance, my God, that's like eternal. It's always been there, and it always will be there. Tune into it if you have forgotten how beautiful it is and how good it smells. And it's the same thing with the relationship, I think, that if you come back to why you came together to begin with. Now, look, that doesn't mean, I mean, you know, that we outgrow each other and so forth, but I don't even get into that. I prefer to stick with the positive and come back to why you came together to begin with and go back to that place. And not allow anything to get in the way.
That's such wonderful advice. It really is, because I love that. What are you committed to? And I think that's it. When we are committed in our heart, in our spirit, in our soul.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what else do we have, folks? You tell me if there's anything else. I want to know. I only know what I feel and what has served me at this point in my life and what I see and what I feel. And it's really not about others. It's about what I feel, what conclusions I've drawn in my heart. So I figure if I've drawn these conclusions in my heart and I have overcome and I have had that brave heart to stand there and have eggs thrown at me because I believed in something bigger than myself. I didn't even understand what it is, but I knew I felt it. Hey, I'm in awe. I'm continuously in awe of, in other words, nothing is stale and old and take it for granted because I'm in awe.
Is a beautiful place to live.
Yeah,
and a beautiful place to be. And I have to tell you, when I've watched your services and yours are, you know, I've been in absolute awe of you. And even the things that you say. I mean, I even remember reading on your website where you said the children are our future. What a better way to receive and to give them life through our deepest caring. Their poverty is our poverty and our shame. And we have to listen to their voices of hope. And I remember reading that, and it was just like my heart just opened wide. And I know that children are a huge part of your world and part of your journey, and I would love you to share that, because certainly the children are our future, and there is something so deeply connected to you and the voices.
Yes, because I was a child, so I still see things from a child's perspective. You know, I don't think of myself or my children or most people around me. I just see and feel things differently. I see the purity in people, you know, the purity in them, who they really are, what they are, and they will always be. They just come back to it. But to answer your question about the children, here's the deal on that, okay? right. And I need your help out there, okay? Here's what we're doing. I came up with a strategy. I remembered when there was prayer in school, and they took it out in 1962. Actually, the woman was an atheist, and she came from an atheist society, and she got murdered from her atheist society. So prayer has not been around. I don't want to even get into, as a result of it, when you don't have reverence, when you don't have something of acknowledging something that's to be grateful for, then a nation will lose something. And so I came up about 8 months ago with, and it came through the Sabbath, because whenever we would be just about to put a piece of bread in our mouth or the wine or the food, what are we grateful for here? And everybody would say what they're grateful for, and the kids would say what they're grateful for. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I got to put this into the schools before class starts, a gratitude buddy circle, meaning to dispel bullying, anti-Semitism, discrimination, bigotry. The kids, if they have a chance before class starts to replace prayer with gratitude buddy circle, where they each say what they're grateful for. And if they start doing this like at 2 years old, the minute that they could start talking and through school, kids grow up to be buddies. They grow up to care about each other. And when the undesirable energy and people and organizations come and want to prey on them to come with them, they won't do it. They won't. They will stick with their buddies, and they will do good work for their community, for their school, for their family, for everything. But how do they learn that? And I feel they learn it too, getting to know every day before class starts, what are you grateful for? And it goes on, you know, grateful for my hands, my eyes, I can see you, my feet, I can walk over, because there's, you know, and they learn that there are people that don't have feet. Their hearts develop. And so I'm trying to get this in schools across America and into the media. I need help. The media, before we turn on TV, when we turn on TV or radio and we're going to get the good news of the day, first, before the news, good morning, what are you grateful for? Take 2 seconds of that, and it really deserves a lot more than 2 seconds. But 2 seconds will be, 2 seconds is better than no seconds. And the world starts with, in America, with gratefulness. And the media does that, and they do that in all assemblies. And before you know it, there will be a change. And America will once again be that shining light and armor to the world. And the world will change. And then those minority groups that are out there that wanted to see it their way, they'll be outnumbered, and they won't have the strength. They won't have the power, because they won't have what we have. And so that is my goal. I want to do I want to do a commercial, just like any candidate does a commercial, but not for money, just to show the gratitude circles in school, and for people to vote for it, so that the school systems will have no choice but to put it in. I'm already in progress with the charter schools where I've been invited to. What happened was, about 6 months ago, a teacher in Riverside gave an assignment to their kids to research the Holocaust. Was there really? She suggested things that were inappropriate, very sensitive. And before you know it, the media was there, and they called me. And before you know it, I was asked to speak and at the schools and Fairfax High School, and now Beverly Hills, whole district. So what I'm saying is that I came with my story. I came as a voice and a face for discrimination, for bigotry, for hate. So, and I came with a solution. So, guys, This is what I need to, and I'm asking the mayor, I volunteered. I'd like to be ambassador for Goodwill of Los Angeles. So it all stems from goodwill, gratitude, to bring it back to a sense of something that we can truly have hope and feel it. You feel it right away. You know, it's, in a way, it's so simple to turn things around. It really is, with the examination of your heart and looking upward and having your conversation with God within a second. It works for me.
I love that. A gratitude circle, or starting the news with, what are you grateful for today? I mean,
exactly.
Just taking that moment for, and what a great, you know, conversation around the water coolers. What are you grateful for today? Instead of people complaining about the problems, to actually think about their gratitudes. And I love the fact that you're saying, you know, look, I can walk across the floor and I have feet and there are people that don't, and giving children that perspective.
That's right.
And it's interesting because there was a time I used to speak all the time at elementary schools on career day, and for years and years. And so I used to speak about being an actress, and then I talked about being a writer, and I talked about being, you know, owning businesses and also being an entrepreneur and all of these things. And every year I would go and I would work with these elementary schools, first to fifth grade. And then one day I said, gosh, I can teach philanthropy. And philanthropist is a really big word to put on the blackboard, and it's something you always want to check the night before to make sure you're spelling it correctly. And then I would tell the kids that you could be anything. You could have any career and still be a philanthropist. And that you could be a philanthropist and you can be in first grade, that a philanthropist gives them something that they need. And if you gave somebody a hug today, you're a philanthropist. And if you shared
That's right.
your sandwich or your food, you're a philanthropist. And then I would give them, you know, money. I would give them, like, take $20, and then they could buy a toy in my little toy store for $8 or $12, or they could buy one toy. And then with the money that was left, that $8 or $10, they could be philanthropists, and they could give it to the puppies at the SPCA, or they can give it, you know, send a kid to camp, or they could give it to people in Haiti. And they got to just decide, you know, how they were going to be philanthropists. And then they would write me letters, like, I'm going to be a philanthropist, like, spelt. But just, it gave
yeah.
them a different sense of gratitude and what was possible,
and it fires them up inside that they have worth, that there's meaning to life, there's a purpose why they're here. When you give the children and to understand that how the world is waiting for you, the world is waiting for you. So the world is waiting for you to do good, to do more good. And when kids understand that, then it's worth going to school. It's worth trying to make money. If you want, money is good to make because you could do so many good things with it. So many good things for other people besides yourself. So many good things. Like, people can have a warm blanket, you know. People could have something to eat because you've got the money so that they can have that. So if you think that earning money is selfish, it's not, or it's like it doesn't, that means you're not a philanthropist, that means you're not a giving person. Oh, no, that means if you go to school and you become something to serve the world, because anything you become, you're going to serve the world. And if it's done with that intention to do good, to help people realize how beautiful everything is, how everything is possible, as long as you don't hurt human life intentionally. And then the children realize how important they are, and they are, because the children will save tomorrow. They will. They will.
Mm-hmm. I love this. This is just the best information. I'm smiling ear to ear. And I know that you work with the United Nations and that you are huge in the philanthropy world and volunteering for organizations worldwide. And as somebody that is looking to make a difference in their community on the planet, how would you suggest that somebody decides where to make a difference? Because I think people, they don't even know. They get envelopes in the mail saying, please give money for this, and please, and they just get so frustrated,
yeah.
They shut down, and they don't do anything. They don't
right.
take a step. And so how would you suggest that somebody steps up to make a difference?
And one of the reasons that I felt it was so important and significant for me to do Friday nights is for the Sabbath is to get the community involved socially and spiritually together. The two go hand in hand. So it's very important to be engaged in some either Bible study class or some networking class or something where there's other people and you do it together and it's more hands-on, meaning that you see what you're giving to and the results of it. And when you do it with community, it's like it just really bonds everything that you want and think that you can't have or you're searching for out there. It's very important to bond within the community. Community then takes care of each other. Look, we can't do across the world maybe what we would like to do is to help. But we can help and not feel useless and not feel, well, where do I start? You know, I don't have $1 zillion. I can't go across the country. But what you do have is you're here. It's right at your fingertips. There are networking groups. There are temples or churches. Get involved within the community. And then everything unfolds for you. And then you have all the resources. Yeah, that's why we started so what we support, like for instance, 1 out of 4, I forgot already the numbers, is starving here in Los Angeles, folks. Would you believe? Where all this food is wasted. I mean, don't even get me on that one. The fact is that the people line up in front of the regional food banks and SOVA, different food pantries with empty cartons waiting for their carton to be filled up with cans of food. When I saw that rationing, that reminded me of the war, and that reminded me of my father and that on the run and with the food. I said, no way. No way, Jose. Our Shabbos buddies, we are going to make sure that we supply whenever we do anything. I always ask, except for Shabbat, when we do concerts or we did this High Holy Days, I don't charge money, but bring cans of food. Then we bring that cans of food over to on La Brea, to the SOVA pantry, and they distribute it all over. Then I feel so good.
It's wonderful. It is. You know,
yeah.
I remember that Harry Chapin, the singer, who is one of my favorite singers, who did Cats in the Cradle and Taxi, and Harry Chapin on one of his albums had suggested, he said, what if on Monday after Thanksgiving, all the principals and all the elementary schools called an assembly and said, boys and girls, I am so proud to be your principal. I am so blessed and I am so grateful to have you as my boys and girls. And because of all the cans that we collected, we fed however many families, however many children, and he told them, and he said, that's so wonderful. You made so many people happy. But I have a question for you. What are they going to eat next week? And then open that up to the children. How different our world would be if the principals did that on the Monday after Thanksgiving.
Right.
I always love that idea of opening that thought. And so I love that you're doing that. And how do people reach you that are listening that want to, I mean, because you're doing so much and your work is just so incredible. What's the best way to find
you? Thank you. By the way, it is, I feel that every school across America, okay, not just every school, but every place of business should have a carton where people bring cans of food before they go buy their lipstick and at Nordstrom's and all over, which is okay too, you know. But to have a carton of food is always a reminder of those that are in need. That should be in every store, in every school and every church, is every synagogue, everywhere. I mean, you know, would that work?
It certainly helped. I know that in
be
some
fed
sort of
all year
third
around.
World countries, yes, in third world countries, they have these refrigerators out
around.
On the streets. Yes.
And because when I was on Channel 5, the lady anchor asked me, well, that's very nice what you do on Thanksgiving. And I held back and I said, excuse me, what do you mean what I do on Thanksgiving? Yes, you feed people. I said, well, actually, I do this every day because people are actually hungry every day. So, you know, I get it. I mean, I get it, and I know you get it, and I know you out there get it. And it's, you know, it's a matter of what we get to get our hands and feet busy to make it happen. And you are, you know, just the fact listening to this wonderful show of awareness, you know, if you do one little thing can make or break things in this world. That's how important each person with a beating heart or animal or anything is so important. Everything counts.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for that. Yes, it does. And so tell me how to find you. Is it your website?
Oh,
the best way?
Yes, if they go to my website, that would be great. Or they can just Google me, Cantor Esther Leon Schwartz, because a lot more comes up on Google information. But and my website comes up. But if they Google, yeah. Or they can, you know, go, however, just type it in. It'll come up some way. It comes up.
Okay, because I know people
yeah.
are like feverishly, and those of you that have been taking notes diligently, you can simply send a text message to 55678. Just pick up your phone, dial 55678, and the message is Nicole, and you can download a copy of today's show or any of our archive shows. And I know that this information is something that you want to listen to over and over again, so it's really easy. Just text 55678, Nicole, and you can listen to this show and share it with your friends and your community and your neighbors. And Esther, we just have a couple of minutes, and I just wanted to acknowledge that today is the beginning of the new year and the Jewish religion,
yes.
the High Holy Days. And one of the things that we talk about is atonement and
yes.
forgiving people. And so just in our very last few minutes, can you talk about the art of forgiveness?
Yes. You don't have to forget, but because some things you cannot forget. And it's not, I don't feel it's realistic like saying, well, forget that there was a Holocaust. You have to remember in order to forgive, that it shouldn't happen again. So the point of forgiveness is so that you can purify your own heart, continue to do good things, but always remember, if you forget to forgive, then you can't have a pure heart. So it's not a matter of like saying it never happened. It did happen, whatever happened. However, because we are so frail and we sometimes do things and people do things that they don't mean to, they weren't born that way. You were not born that way. You were born pure in attributes of God. So therefore, they didn't know what they were doing at the time. And whatever it was, this is now. Let's start fresh. Let's care. But we never forget it. It's unrealistic for me too, because I've been asked this many times, but I do forgive. I forgive because, hey, you're one of God's children. He forgives. God forgives, okay? When you repent, when you renew your vows and you show it in action day in, day out, and you try to remember. So, yeah. So it's better to forgive than not to forgive, and it's easier to live with yourself thereafter. You feel cleaned out inside. But you don't have to. You don't have to not remember.
I love that. That's a great way to say it. And it's, you know, for those that are listening that aren't familiar, this is what they consider New Year, a high holiday,
right.
So it's a clean slate. And so we all have that opportunity in our lives to start today as a brand new day. And I
That's
love
right.
the fact that you were with us today, sharing that absolutely everything is possible, and you're amazing. Journey from the moment you were born.
You have this program. You are.
Well, I love sharing this information, and I really, to bring people the tools and the techniques and the secrets and the keys and the doorways to unfold their life into the happily ever after, because we all deserve to live that happily ever after that we know is possible, and that we can give that happily ever after to those next to us, that we have the opportunity to reach out our hands and help those in front of us and those besides us, and even turn around and help those behind us up, and that we all have that ability to be able to stand there and open our hearts and share our love. And that's what you do every single day. So I'm so grateful that you are with us at the beginning of this new year and sharing your amazing journey and adventure and all that you do for the community and every life that you touch.
Thank you. Thank you all out there. Thank you for your ears, and just go do your thing. And don't forget to look up and say a trillion thank yous all day long, and you'll be so happy and calm inside and with clarity like never before. And miracles, miracles will be coming your way like you wouldn't ever have dreamed of. Anywho.
Enter Esther Leon Schwartz, we are grateful for you as we are counting our blessings today. So thank you for being with us. What a beautiful show. Wow, what an amazing gift. What an extraordinary woman. Can you imagine being born that way, having nuns carry you in and bring you down to a basement and have to hide you, and being thrown over a fence to the Red Cross, and your father saying, God, save this child, and I promise she will serve you, and look what she has done. Look at this extraordinary life and every day and every breath, the way that she gives and the voice that comes out of her, this voice of heaven. And so just wonderful information. Everything is possible for you. It is possible. So it's Nicole Brandon and Cantor Esther Leon Schwartz wishing you